This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Friday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to a special training episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May 29th, episode 1179. Good morning, Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Friday morning, the last Friday before June. And it's not usually Mary's day. Usually Mary's here the second Thursday of every month, but you were kind of on vacation. We'll talk a little bit about that. So thank you so much for filling in. Jamie's out today, so you decided to switch days, and that worked out very well. Thank you so much.
Not a problem.
And we get to hear your Southern accent and your voice in such clarity now.
I know, it's crazy. You know, it's funny. I don't ever think that I have a Southern accent, and then I hear myself on TV, and I'm like, "Oh, there it is."
That's what it is. Yours is slight, though. It's very slight. It's not.
You know. It's all over the place because I'm an Air Force brat, so I've been everywhere. You know, I was born in California, and then I spent several years in Oklahoma. You know, I think I was there for 10 years, and I did a semester of high school up in Illinois, moved to Illinois briefly, and I didn't know that I had any accent till I moved there, and people really pointed it out. Actually, one girl, when I first went to school there, she thought I was British. Oklahoma accent is about as far from British as you can get.
Well, you sound terrific. Sound terrific. And you don't sound like you're underwater. We're going to talk a little bit about that, too, because Mary does live in Texas, so we'll get an update on what's going on down there. But first, let's go to Jennifer and find out what's on today's show.
On today's Mary Kitzmiller Thursday on a Friday episode, we'll start with Mary's latest horse training adventures from south of the border. And then next up, we will be joined by Donna Duval for a chat about using groundwork obstacles to make your horse better under saddle, and who doesn't want that? And then after the break, John St. Ryan stops by to talk about equitation science. And last but not least, happy 5th anniversary to Jamie and Chad, who are currently at this very moment enjoying a relaxing visit with family and friends. So stay tuned for the Friday, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. Appreciate that. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's going on over there in Texas. Now, where you are in Texas, is it flooding as bad as it is in Houston and down that way?
No, thank goodness. We do have some flooding. I get flood warnings every day, and I'm kind of turning around like, where? But we have a lot of standing water at my place, and we've had a lot of torrential rain and thunderstorms and tornado warnings, but we're not as bad as what's been going on in Houston and down by the Blanco River. And I guess up Weatherford, they're having some troubles as well. So very thankful to not have the same troubles across the rest of the state. But this has been insane. I mean, I think now, last night, I think we crossed over into this is the wettest May on record, and it'll probably maybe the wettest month in history for Texas, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I noticed that you were posting on Facebook, you were spending more time in your storm shelter than you were above. It's like, oh my gosh, she's back in the storm shelter again.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had that put in last year and finally got to break it in. And I have 9 dogs. And so when you have storms and 9 dogs and you have to get them across your yard into a storm shelter, it's a very interesting experience.
Running everywhere going, let's play.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Well, and the scary thing is, you know, normally, you know, I grew up in Moore, Oklahoma, which is the tornado alley capital, yeah. of tornado alleys. Yes. And we went through the biggest tornado they ever had when I was in high school. And so with it, so my mom, that makes her ultra paranoid in storms. But for me, I'm like, bah, it's not an F5 tornado. We'll live. And but this
typical
year
horse
is,
girl.
Exactly. So normally I'm the one who's like, ah, it's fine, you know. We're not going to get anything, but some of this stuff this year has kind of cropped up out of nowhere. One of the tornado warnings we got happened after we got the all clear on the thunderstorm warning, so we haven't been sleeping much the last few weeks. They always seem to roll in at night.
Yeah, it's always 2 a.m. when the tornado warnings hit. It's just when you're sleeping really good.
Oh yeah,
that really happened. Now, is yours underground? Is it built underground?
It's halfway underground, yeah, and it's a cool little deal. It's just this little cement box. It took them, you know, a few hours to throw in there. Just dug a hole and sunk that in. So yeah, definitely
now,
worth the money.
Are you one of those that believes put the horses in the barn or leave them out?
You know, I would have said several years ago, leave them out until that tornado and more. That went over the boarding stable where I had my horse. Luckily, we had moved her from there a couple weeks before. And we were on the Air Force Base on the corner that it went over. And there were 26 horses on the base. And it happened in the afternoon, so they had all been put away to get fed. And out of 26, we only lost 2. It pulled the barns right off of them, and it took one mare, and she actually went across the highway. That was one of the ones that was lost. But the other horses, you know, they had a lot of splinters, you know, a lot of nicks and bruises, but for the most part, they were okay. But when you looked out into the pasture, it looked like a javelin toss. There were tree branches stuck in the ground every few feet, and they were so deep in the ground you couldn't pull them out. You know, a couple grown men couldn't pull them out. The horse trailers were gone. I don't know where they went. And so the horses in the barns were okay. So for me, I'd say put them in if you can, just from personal experience.
I know Jamie has joked about her husband's family is from Oklahoma, near Moore, actually, right in that area. And they've joked about maybe moving there someday. And she said, if I ever do, I'm putting up a concrete barn.
Yeah, well, I've seen one. There's someone maybe in Texas. I saw it on Facebook. They have this huge barn that's like a safe room. And the stalls in it are like tie stalls. So they're not full stalls, but you can put the horses in there and tie them up. And then you can hang out there as well. And you're supposed to withstand a huge tornado. And yeah.
That's fine if you have the time. But a lot of times in tornadoes, you don't have the time to even get your horses someplace. You know, it's get yourself or nothing.
Well, and luckily in Moore, they've gotten so good at reporting it, obviously, because it happens 17 times a year. But they will interrupt primetime television and they'll say what street it's on and when it's coming and what you should do. But it's funny because I've been to other parts of the country where their weather got really sketchy, like when I was in Illinois, and they come on the news and they're like, there's a tornado, Moore at 10. I'm like, what? Where is it? And, so yeah, I guess the one blessing of living around that area is they're really, really on top of it with the warnings.
Well, we wish everybody the best. I mean, we have a lot of listeners down there in Texas, and I know a lot of you have horses, so we wish you the best. I know Tammy Sarantz was on earlier in the week, and she, you know, at that point was saying, oh, I'd been flooded once. Well, apparently she's been flooded again, and it's ruined a lot of her stuff. She posted some pictures, and there were inches of water in her living room, and it just looked like a mess. And you know, having lived through floods before, it is a mess. It's just a mess to clean up. Then you got the mold issues. It's just a whole bunch of crap you have to deal with. So we're wishing her the best and giving her great big hugs as well. Now, I've had several listeners ask me specifically, you are going to ask about the Z-Donk, right? How's the Z-Donk doing? So your Z-Donk needs a report.
Yeah, well, she hasn't floated away yet. Unfortunately, because of the rainfall, I haven't done a whole lot with her. I've started doing the target training with her because that's something, you know, the clicker training. So that's something that doesn't require, you know, an arena with footing and that kind of thing. So she's doing really well right now. She's just sort of hanging out and we're just kind of biding our time till this weather clears up and then hoping we can get to work.
And has she named yet?
I cannot come up with a name for this animal. This has been the toughest thing. When you get to a certain number of horses, pretty soon they just become known as the roan horse or the palomino. Yeah. So she is the Zedonk at the moment. Probably Z for short. But the reason she's not named is I feel so much pressure to come up with the most perfect name ever. So hopefully I'll find it.
Have you thought about doing a contest with your fans?
I have. If I do it, I have to have a lot of trust in my fans that she doesn't get named something silly.
But you get to pick the winner, so you'll be okay.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, yeah, that's probably the next step if I can't figure out a name.
Well, now, I gotta know, does she sound sort of like this? Does she make this sound? Does she do that?
Yeah, that's about right. You know, she didn't talk forever. And I was just so anxious to hear her talk because I thought, you know, is she going to be a donkey or is she going to sound like a zebra?
Now, what zebra do zebras sound like? Do they sound like horses?
No, it's really weird. I wouldn't even know what to call it. You'll have to Google.
Okay.
She sounds like a donkey. I've started graining her. And so... That brought out her lovely singing voice.
Okay. All right. Well, now this is what zebras are supposed to sound like. I don't know what I'm going to get here. That sounds like barking to me.
Right?
Is that what zebras sound like?
Uh-huh.
Wow, that sounds like barking almost, doesn't it?
Right? Yeah, it's interesting. So, but she sounds like a donkey.
Huh. Well, we're so excited for you. I hope that it stops raining there someday and that you can actually get to do something with her.
So. Me too. Right now, she's just a beautiful yard ornament.
Now, have you fussed with her at all? Halters, you know, walking her around, doing anything with her?
Yeah. And I've started with the clicker training on her and
does she like treats?
Oh, yes. She does like treats.
Does she have a favorite?
Yeah, edible. If she can eat it, she likes
it. That's funny. Well, now you were also, we got so much to cover here because it seems like forever since I've talked to you last. You were in Mexico. It's the reason we couldn't do your show at the normally scheduled time. It was partly, I know, vacation. So tell us first about the vacation part, then I want to talk to you about a little work you did while you were down there.
Right. Well, the lady who does the marketing for me, and I want to get her on the show someday, Marty McGinnis.
Oh, sure.
She is, she used to live in Kentucky, out near Lexington, yeah. And she relocated to Mexico, to San Miguel de Allende, which is a big, they have a big expat community down there. A lot of gringos go down there. A lot of people from Canada, America.
Get this right. All the Mexicans are illegally sneaking up here because it's so bad down there, and all the Mexicans are doing that, and the Americans are going down there because they want to get away from here.
Exactly. It makes total sense.
Just switching.
Yeah. And actually, you know, it's important to note that part of Mexico, after spending many weeks down there, I felt completely safe. There's a lot of sensationalism in the media. And of course, you know, the danger is real in those towns, the border towns and places like that. But San Miguel is very safe. The people are wonderful, very nice. They have a very strong police presence. And they do so because it is such a huge tourism place, not only for Americans, but for Mexicans. A lot of Mexicans go there on holiday. And so it behooves them to keep that place safe. And there are a lot of really safe places in Mexico. And we drove all, we got a rental car, we drove all around and, never felt never felt unsafe. A lot of Americans started going down there after World War II and started building artist communities. There's a lot of art down there. It's a really, really cool, eclectic place. And that's where my marketing lady lives, who is an artist herself. She does wonderful work. And so we kind of had an in to go down there and visit and see the sites. And she has horses. And she's gotten to know the local community and the local cowboys out there. So we were able to do a cool little clinic down there for the locals and for some other people as well. And it was a lot of fun.
Now, you said that you were working with a 12-year-old gelding. Was that...
Yeah, it was a really interesting demo. So I only knew I was going to go down there and work with some young horses and do kind of a young horse handling demo. And then also I did a positive reinforcement demo. She has a cool little mini horse who has his own Facebook presence that I did a short positive reinforcement demo. It was supposed to start at 9. And so 9 o'clock rolls by and the horse still hasn't showed up and not sure where it is. And someone was supposed to go get it and walk it down the roads to the round pen, and no one showed up. And apparently the guy who owned the horse couldn't catch it and just didn't tell anybody that he couldn't get it. So one of the local cowboys went down, and I don't know if it was the same horse he got or he just grabbed another horse out of a field somewhere and roped this gelding that came down. And so I'm working in the round pen with this mini horse, and I see this this guy ride up in a charro saddle, and he's got this horse dallied off, and as soon as he gets in the property, the horse gets loose and starts running around the property. What a great way to start. So luckily it had this really, really long, like 50-foot long rope on it. So I was able to gather it up and go in there. And I knew, looking at the horse, I didn't really get too much of a history on it other than they had tried to start it and couldn't. It just didn't work out. So the horse had just been left out. Out to pasture and wasn't being used and wasn't hardly handled. But I knew it had some age on it, you know, so I worked with the horse and it ended up really good. I crawled all over the horse bareback and did some stuff and at the end I found out, I was like, how old is this thing? And they're like, it's 12 and it hasn't been messed with at all. It doesn't know anything. I'm like, oh, well, that's nice. So it went really, really well. I was really, really happy with it.
What do they have mostly down there? Is it all Santa Hunts 57?
It is, yeah. And they look like little Mustangs. And I went on a trail ride while I was there. It was the coolest trail ride I've ever been on. And I asked our guide, you know, what kind of horse is this? And I believe he said it was like a Mexican charro horse, which I don't know if that's any kind of breed or if it's just... This is just
the
what
generic
we have.
Name.
Yeah.
Now, aren't they smaller too than the, like, almost pony?
They were pretty, like, about Mustang size. So, you know, some I saw as little as, 15, 14 hands. Pretty tiny and stout little horses.
Huh. Now, that's interesting. Tell us about the trail ride. I want to hear a little bit about that.
That was really neat. There's an area out side of San Miguel where they actually have a pyramid out there you can go see. I didn't see that, but me and a friend went out, and it's just kind of out in the mountains. And so we go up, and it's this old hacienda, old farm, and they've got the horses saddled for us, and cute little horses. And I think my horse's name was Santuario, which I looked that up and it means sanctuary. And
got that's on good. Horses. You'd rather have that one than the one whose name means jerk or, you know.
Cute. El Diablo.
Exactly.
Well, and they were really, really well-trained horses. They were great horses and, very well cared for and fat and shiny. And so we went across the riverbed and up on the side of this cliff. It was like a straight drop. And the cool thing about it, it was a holiday. There was something going on where everyone was having a party. So a lot of families were going down to the river. And as I'm on this trail ride, I hear mariachi music coming from the river. I was like, this is such a Mexican experience. And it was amazing. The views were gorgeous and definitely worth doing. It was a lot of fun.
Huh, that's interesting. So did you get to eat along the way, along the riverbank then?
Yeah, actually, that was one of the best parts. So on the way back, when we went back, they had food prepared for us, and it was really good. It was, you know, quesadillas and salsa and all sorts of really yummy stuff, tortillas and vegetables. And it was all fresh, you know, all homegrown, and they made it themselves, and oh, it was wonderful. It was the best food I had down there, actually.
Well, that's interesting. I'm glad you had such a good time. The only message I got from you at one point was you were drinking some kind of adult beverage and had your feet up. So that was what I heard about vacation was.
Yeah. Yeah, there was that too.
There's a few of those days, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. You needed it because you had just finished Road to the Horse, and then it was like, okay, now I can take a break.
Yeah, what a good way to unwind.
Well, terrific. And Marty, I met her... I don't know how I met her. I've known her for years, and I don't know how I met her. I don't know where we met. We must have met somewhere during the WEG time, during World Equestrian Games in Lexington. But I know I've known her for years. It was good to see her there at Road to the Horse.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I met her through her mini horse, actually, because he's this little mini who's on Facebook. His name is Iota McHippus, and he's very snarky. And I started following this horse, and I tell you what, when I read the Facebook post, I actually believe it's coming from the horse. That, you know, it doesn't sound like he has anyone typing for him. It's just, it's really funny, really cute Facebook page.
I have to. What is it again?
Iota McHippus.
McHippus.
Okay. Yes.
Maybe Jennifer can find that and post it on our Facebook page. Well, we are. It is time for Mary's Trainer Tip of the Month, and this week you're talking about rising to the level of the horse.
Yeah, you know, I had this conversation in an interview a little while back, and this one's a little bit more abstract. This one isn't as easy as, you know, getting your horse to cross a tarp or whatever, but it was one of the biggest epiphanies I had in horsemanship. So, you know, I totally feel the need to share it anytime it pops into my head. And what I mean by rising to the level of the horse, and I don't know where that phrase came from. I think it came from a clinic I did with Martin Black. I think it came from him. And it was actually at that clinic that I had that kind of huge epiphany. So, you know, in my own experience with horses, when I started out, I learned a program, you know, typical natural horsemanship program, and it had a lot of desensitizing and getting your horse used to all the things that could go wrong, and you know, a lot of flexing and making him really soft and all of that. And the idea when I first started working with colts especially was to get the horse pretty dumbed down so that I couldn't fall off so that I would stay safe. So, you know, that worked for me in the beginning. But what the result of it was, so the result was I had very safe horses. I did not get bucked off of the colts I started. You know, they didn't do, you know, bad things that horses can sometimes do when they're frightened or reactive. And so that was great. So I had these really safe horses, and I was training horses for the public that were really safe. You know, bomb-proof was the word we used. That's what I tried to do with the horse. I tried to get them not to react to anything, to where I could let, you know, set off fireworks and they weren't going to budge. You know, and I'd stand on them and crack stock whips and all that fun stuff. And it was really cool. And you know, the clients were happy. But where I started hitting a little snafu was when I went to train performance horses. And then the same horse that was so great, you know, at 30 days of training, at 90 days of training, when it's time for him to start doing a high-level performance job, we'd run into trouble because now my horse wasn't sensitive anymore. I kind of taught him to ignore everything. So I found out it was really unfair for me to train horses in that way, to where, you know, I get them to where they ignore nearly everything. But then when it's time for them to go on a cow or, you know, do a really fast high level reining maneuver where they need to be really light and feely and sensitive, they just couldn't do that. It was very difficult to put the life back in them. And that's when I learned you can take the life out of the horse all day long, but you cannot put the life back in. I mean, you can, but it's very difficult. So what that taught me was, okay, you know, in the beginning when I was green and I didn't know what I was doing, it was important for me to get that horse down to my level and teach him to take care of me. But once I got good enough, now it's important for me to rise to his level and it's important for me to take care of him. And so for those of you out there, you know, if I was training a horse that was just going to be a trail horse his whole life, you know, the way I was doing it in the beginning, it would not be a bad way to go about things because that horse just kind of needs to go down the trail and ignore a lot of stuff that might pop in his path and take, you know, maybe take care of a young rider and an older rider, a novice rider. But if you are looking to advance your horsemanship and you want to get into high level dressage or cow work, or you just want to be a better horseman, at some point in your career, you're going to have to learn how to keep the life in that horse. And the best, the best time I've ever had with horses was when I realized how wonderfully sensitive and soft they already are. And I learned how to keep that life and keep that sensitivity in the horse, but also keep myself safe. And that's a really hard line to walk. And it's kind of a lifetime pursuit of mine.
That is a hard line to walk.
Yeah.
it really is.
Yeah, hard to explain, a little bit more abstract, but I just kind of want to start planting that seed in people's minds who want to go to that next level.
Huh, interesting. And do you think that anybody that gets to the higher levels in whatever discipline has that light bulb moment with each particular horse, or they don't get there?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. I think some people kind of always start from that place. You know, maybe they have the great luck and fortune to work with someone, you know, to start in a program that's already doing that, and that's just kind of how they learn. You know, or maybe more people have my experience. You know, in the beginning, I just had to stay safe because I didn't know enough to help a horse out of a situation. So I had to make that horse help me. You need to save my butt if I make a mistake. Mm-hmm. Well, at some point, you've got to switch it around and say, okay, I know that you're thinking about running and you're scared and you're active. I'm going to be here to help you out of it. And a lot of that involves developing an independent seat and making sure your riding skills are up to snuff. And then, of course, having really good timing of knowing what's going to happen before it even happens. And, you know, I heard a saying, it might have been in reference to the Dorrances, but they said, you know, I think there were three Dorrance brothers who were accomplished horsemen. And they said one of them could ride a buck out of any horse, and one of them could talk a horse out of bucking. But the other one, and I don't know who was who in this aspect, the other one could make it so bucking never entered that horse's brain. And so when, you know, that's a lofty goal. When you get in to be, you know, a good horseman, I think you need to work with horses in a way, not that you're trying to fix problems, or even, you know, that you're trying to stop problems once they happen, but that the horse, it just never enters their mind to even be that way. So that's,
you know, that's a good point. We're working. I'm going through that right now with my driving pony. In his training, we're at the point where we're right at that line now where we're working on safety because he's had a bolting issue with certain noises. So we're working on desensitizing him to the noises and all of that. And his first reaction is to bolt. And, you know, whether you're riding or driving, bolting's never a fun experience. So, you know, we're at that point now where we're working on safe, but also not dull and boring, you know, so that, you know, he doesn't get to the point where he's lethargic. And you know, I know exactly what you're talking about. There is that time, and we're at that time with him where it could go either way, and we have to be very careful. So we're really at that time, and we're hoping that, and I believe that horses, like in anything, like with humans in training of any kind for anything, I used to teach sales training, and I used to see this all the time. There's always a series of little light bulbs that go on. All through your training, you can see the light bulbs going on in your horses, and you can see it. I mean, Road to the Horse, you can see the light bulbs are going on in that 3-day period of time. And but you know, some light bulbs are bigger than others. Some have more wattage than others, and some affect the future more than others. And so we're at that point now where I know that, you know, we got the 100-watt light bulb now, and, you know, it's going to affect his future and how we handle him over the next month and how he comes through that that segment of training that we're at now.
Oh, yeah. And you know, that's really tricky stuff, you know, especially working with young horses that you're having to teach everything to. And, you know, speaking of Road to the Horse, I always think that the best competitors that I've ever seen, Chris Cox would be one of them. Those are the ones, you know, I've been to colt starting competitions and events where I saw someone do a really good job with the horse, but you could see a lot of effort in what they were doing. You know, you just saw a lot of effort. And the good ones, the great ones, are the ones who look like, man, he just lucked out and he got
a good horse.
The easiest horse in the bunch. You know, what a lucky guy that he got that horse. And, you know, actually, you know, if you gave him 12 horses, you would see that, man, he lucked out and got 12 really nice horses.
Well, it happened because they reached training two, and both of his horses were like 1 and 2, and they both looked that way. So you're right.
Yeah, didn't he have all the luck? He just got the nicest horses in the bunch. Yeah. And that's why they did that, was to say, you know, okay, yeah, it is possible to look out and get a, you know, get a nice one to work with, but can you do it with two? And you know, so a horseman like Chris, you know, really show that, you know, it just looks effortless. It's like, man, what a lucky guy. He got just a sweet horse.
And isn't that true of anybody who's really accomplished at anything? Whether it's tennis or, you know, whatever it is. They're really good at that, and they make it look easy. You know, we have the added thing of having a horse with a mind and an attitude, whatever that is. So, you know, but, you know, tennis ball doesn't usually have that. But, you know, they just make it look easy. It's the same thing, you know. You don't see the 25 years it took him to get to that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And, you know, all the times they failed on the way there to learning how to do it. We just get hurt
more than they do in the failures on the way, you know, that.
Oh, yeah.
Ours tend to hurt more. Yeah. Well, why don't we bring your first guest into this conversation? Go ahead and introduce her.
Okay, we have with us today Donna Duvall, who's also probably underwater in Texas. And we're going to talk about working over obstacles and also working with the great Jack Brainerd. Hi, Donna. How are you?
Hi, Mary. I'm wonderful. How are you?
Good, good. How's your place? Are you underwater?
Well, no, I only got a smidgen of rain overnight, so the big storms missed me, thank you, God, and my place actually started to dry out yesterday a little bit.
I don't even want to hear that.
So,
I'm coming to your place
and
riding. Awesome, awesome, that's always nice.
Yeah.
Well, good deal. Yeah. So, many people may not know that Donna Duvall, she's an excellent horsewoman. We've done many clinics together, or a few clinics together, I should say, and we've been to many events together. And you are a protege of Jack Brainerd. And for those of you who don't know, he's an amazing horseman, you know, one of the best you're ever going to find. And I think, is he 93 now?
Jack is 93.
Wow, and he's still riding clinics. Horses, still teaching clinics, and he's amazing. So that's a really cool experience. And we're going to talk with you today about working with obstacles on the ground. Is that correct?
Yeah, kind of on the ground and maybe a little bit under saddle, but that's just kind of where I start a lot of clinics because I feel it's a huge confidence builder for both horse and rider. So that's where I start a lot of, I used to start under saddle, and I have started doing on my clinics the first part of the day, the first day, really doing some groundwork and doing some obstacle work because I think it really builds up that rider's confidence before they get on their horse, and it sets their horse up for some success.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Yeah, I totally agree, you know, that you can't underestimate that groundwork. So for you, what do you mean by groundwork? What are some of the things, you know, if you're teaching a clinic, what do you feel is something, man, we really have to get through these horses today before we can get under saddle?
What I like to see, and what I see at a lot of the clinics I put on that are mostly horsemanship clinics, and I call them horsemanship and obstacle clinics, but what I get are those riders that a good part of my clinic riders will be a little timid, maybe even a little bit afraid of their horse. And because of that, their horses have become a little spoiled and a little pushy. And so what I want to see in groundwork when we finish is a horse that will lead quietly next to that person, a horse that will kind of back up away from them when they ask, and a horse that on the ground will move his front end and his hindquarters when asked. So I want to get that yielding of those body parts on the ground before we ever get on them, and then I want that horse to send where I want him to go. Because like I tell everybody, when I put the obstacles out there, it's never about the obstacle. It's not about the tarp or the noodle gate or the horse trailer for that matter. It's about having that horse trust you and respect you enough to go where you're asking to go and do it safely.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, I get requests for like a bomb proofing clinic, and they want, you know, just really cool, amazing obstacles to send their horse over. And, you know, really, I find myself, we could probably make your horse go over scary things, and that would be fun. And, you know, it'd be cool. But if that's all it is, if it's just about, oh, I got my horse on a tarp, And I experienced this myself when I started horses. I'd get my horse to cross the tarp, but then the next day he was still Looney Tunes. I'm like, well, I got you over the scary obstacle. You should be fine. And it really comes down to not the obstacle. It really comes down to, do you have that horse's feet? And in turn, do you have that horse's mind? So the obstacle is literally just that. It's an obstacle in the way of getting to good horsemanship. And so I couldn't agree with you more. I think obstacle work is just, you know, a cool thing to try with your horses. Give us an example of some of the obstacles that you mess around with at your clinics.
You know, when we start out, my first obstacle, once we have that horse kind of leading around and being a little respectful, and like you said, getting control of the feet. That's why we work on control of getting them to move their shoulders over, getting them to move their hindquarters before we go to the obstacle. So we have control of the feet. The next thing, my first obstacle is to go between the rider and the fence, because horses are a little claustrophobic. And some of them, when you start pushing on their bubble, will start squirting through you and the fence. And so we have to set them up for success by, I want them to trust me right there before I ever put an obstacle in front of them. And then I start out with something as simple as a rolled up tarp, like a foot wide, because I'm trying to set that horse up for success and trying to set that person up to where they trust their horse. And so that's where we start. We start with something that simple. And then that tarp gets bigger and bigger every time, you know, once they've been successful and been praised for it. And, I believe in positive reinforcement. You know, we pet, rub on them, praise them when they do it right, let them know they did the right thing. And I think that also gives the rider a bigger connection with their horse if they get to do that. And so then, you know, it may just be making that tarp bigger. And then we may go to I like to use a noodle gate, one of the swimming pool noodles, but instead of hanging down vertically, they hang horizontally and they have to push on them. So that takes
what did
a lot
we do
for a horse.
before? Yeah, what did we do before pool noodles? I asked.
I don't know. What did we do?
I don't know what we did in the pool, and I don't know what we did out of the pool.
Our horses were just not broke, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. That's probably the greatest advancement. We have a pool. We must have 25 pool noodles. I don't know what we did in the pool either. I don't know.
That is the greatest advancement in horsemanship since the Snaffle bit. And well, I'm going to be selling my own patented Mary Kitts Miller horsemanship pool noodles. No.
$89.95. What did we do before Walmart bags and pool noodles?
That's true. Oh, yeah. Yeah. What happened before the plastic bag?
That's like, right.
Paper bags never seem to be as much trouble as plastic bags.
You know, horses didn't have anything to spook at before we had noodles and paper bag or plastic bags. They were all broke as heck.
Hey, Donna, I have a question for you. And, you know, I was thinking about this. If, you know, we talk about going through an obstacle and getting through it. Let's say it's the tarp on the ground. You know, is there a point, okay, this horse is just not interested for whatever reason, and you're not getting as far as fast as you thought you would. Is there a point where you back off and come back another day, or do you stick with it? That's going to happen that day no matter what. Is there a point where it becomes unproductive?
I believe if the person handling the horse gets frustrated, gets angry, it is now unproductive. For me, and this is what I try to teach in the clinics, is that horse isn't wearing a watch. It doesn't know that we need to move on in 30 minutes. And I always tell people, especially like with trailer loading, because this is kind of the big thing that my program goes back to, horses that are hard to load, you don't teach them to load the day you need to go to the show because the frustration comes in. So yeah, a lot of times if I have a horse that's just not having any of that very simple rolled up tarp, I go backwards and I'll start moving their feet again. I'll move them away from that obstacle and I give them something that they can do, so that they have a success. And then I may try it again. And most of the time, I'd say 98% of the time, with that program of going back, letting them be successful, just moving their hindquarters, moving their front end, and doing the send exercise between me and a fence, I can come back to that tarp and they're going to try.
Just had to
but
take.
There is, had there to, is a time had to take if a, that frustration comes.
Yeah, and we've all had it. I mean, you know, we're human, so.
We've definitely all been there. I've been at the trailer for 2 or 3 hours, maybe crying, trying to get my horse to you know, always crying. No, yeah, and. That's so hard as a horse trainer to kind of let your emotions just kind of hang under the surface and not let the horse see that you have any agenda. You know, like, we have to go to the horse show today. You know, we're 30 minutes late for our class. And, you know, you just, it's the old adage, if you act like you have 15 minutes, it'll take all day. If you act like you have all day, it'll take 15 minutes, something to that effect.
That describes training.
That's exactly true.
Yeah, describes it best.
Well, and I
that's
also
funny,
wanted
Mary,
to.
You cry, I cuss.
Yeah, well, I also cry and cuss a little
heard
bit.
I've heard a few words come out of Mary's mouth at times.
What? I am the epitome of professionalism and grace. I tell you what, I worked for a few Aussies in the business, and I didn't cuss much before, but afterwards, man, I cuss like a sailor. They string together phrases you wouldn't even know could exist.
I think
it's like an art form.
I think everybody that trains in the horse business goes through one of those people in their training at some point or another. Jennifer had that. She had the woman that the F word was every other word. I think that everybody goes through that one person for any whatever period of time that's that way. It's part of your training growing up, I guess.
I like SpongeBob's take on it. It's not a cuss word. It is a sentence enhancer. And you can just sprinkle it all over your conversation.
There you go.
It just spices
it's like salt.
It up.
Yeah.
Yes. It's one of those things, if you have to let the cuss words fly when you're working with a horse, just do it in the most nicest, beautiful tone you can, and grit your teeth and smile, and it'll all be good.
There you go.
Are there days, Donna, and I bring this up because we had this conversation on the show last week. I have a Hackney driving pony that we're bringing along, and I rescue him as a starving case. And when I got him in the field the other day, he spooked at something and kind of reared up and came down on my foot with a sharp little pony toe, and the side of my ankle and my foot, and it was like I was limping back. And then we get him in the harness and we get him up to the cart. He throws his head up. I don't know what this was about either. He throws his head up and hit me smash in the face, took a chunk out of my nose. And it was like, okay, now he got my foot and my face. And if I hadn't had my helmet on, it would have been much worse. He'd have broken my nose because the brim of the helmet caught him. And I went, okay, Jennifer looked at me and I could tell she was like, please don't take this pony out today. And I didn't. I took him out for a ground drive. We ground drive him for 5-10 minutes, made it a happy ending. And I quit because I knew that wasn't going to be a good day for me to work that pony. I think that's kind of too, we forget about, we have moods, right? We have days that are good and bad. And we also have these kind of agendas in our mind of what we want to accomplish. Do you guys have days where you go, I'm not going to work with horses today because it's just not going to result in anything good?
I absolutely do. I absolutely have learned that if I go out and I'm tense, anxious, angry, especially one of those emotions, my horses sense it so fast, and then they're more, all of a sudden I've become the scary predator, and it's not going to work. And so I have learned, rather than try to beat them and myself up over this, to walk away and go, you know what, today's a good day, have a day off.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I always wondered that about professional trainers, too, if they have those days. Because we all have bad days, for whatever reason, mentally or physically. We all have the... Mary, do you have those days? Or
No. I don't know what you're talking about. yes. Yes, I do. There are days where you just have to unclip the lead rope, pet your horse, go inside, have some coffee. I've actually had a boss do it to me. He got so mad at me. He didn't want to say something. So he just walked away. I'm like, where are you going? Didn't come back for like 3 hours.
Did you have the job then after 3 hours?
I did. Okay, it wasn't my fault. It was, it was kind of a perfect example of me having an understanding for the horse's position because I didn't do something, I didn't do something wrong. It's not like I forgot to water the horses or something like that. I simply just didn't know what I was doing. And, that person couldn't get it across to me. And it was just one of those days, perfect storm of emotions. And instead of saying something bad, he's just had to leave, which, to his credit, that was the right thing to do. But for me, it was just that I didn't understand and I needed time. And so I totally, I have more appreciation for the horse now because they're never doing anything. Horses don't have an agenda. They don't, sometimes we use human terms with horses like, oh, he's cheating me or, he's getting away with it or, he's being a jerk. And it's never that. They're never sitting in their stall.
No, it's really just thinking
hoof.
About lunch,
Yeah, yeah. Or how exactly. How do I get away from pressure? There's so much pressure and, I have to get away. And sometimes that may mean, well, you haven't given me the choice to run. I'm so scared I'm going to defend myself by fighting. I've never really known a horse to have kind of a nature about them, like, oh, I'm really going to mess with you today. Ha ha ha. Because you didn't give me cookies last night. It's just not that way with them. So usually if emotion comes into it, it's our own. And that's what we have to kind of curtail and make sure we're working even keeled.
Yeah, I agree with that because the horses don't have, they don't come out saying, I'm going to mess with you today or I'm not going to. Sometimes they come out lazy or they have their good and bad days, but not like they don't bring emotion like we do into the training sessions. We create that.
Yeah, it's, you know, I just think they're, most of the time, the horse is reacting to what we're doing. So if your horse is nice and relaxed and having a good day, then, you know, pat yourself on the back. I think that's something to always think about when you're working with horses is, you know, if you've seen the Buck Brannaman movie, it's, you know, he says the horse is a mirror to your soul, and that's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah. And, you know, I try to remember, I think I do a pretty decent job of this now, the older I get, is how fascinating, how amazing it is that this horse lets me sit on its back. That this animal that's that much bigger than me, faster than me, allows me to do anything to it. And so when I'm having a bad training day, when they're not getting something I want them to get, you know, I'm trying to teach a turnaround and that horse just isn't putting his feet right. He's not doing it correctly, not doing what I want. I have to remember I'm teaching him, and if he's not doing it right, then I'm failing somewhere in my teaching. And that I have to give this horse credit for even letting me slap that dead cow on his back.
You know, you're absolutely, you're so right. On. I said to my wife the other day, you know, and I drive, so I don't have the contact of the legs and everything that you guys do. And I said to her, I said, isn't it amazing that this horse does what I want to do, makes, you know, these incredible sharp turns and, you know, follows all that commands through slight touches in a bit that's in his mouth.
Right.
You know, it's just amazing, you know, and then you take and you throw a rider on there, no matter what kind of rider, and, you know, they're doing pee-offs because of a slight leg aid that a dressage rider gives. You know, how does that happen? It's just amazing.
What they learn and how much they give us, even on their worst days, is amazing. But, you know, so that's how I kind of try to keep my emotions, you know, my frustration level when something isn't going right, by just being really grateful that this huge animal hasn't decided to kill me. Because they could.
There you go. And we're going to end on that. Your website is Donna Duval, DUVALL.com, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Is your schedule and everything on there as well?
My schedule is on there.
Okay.
I've got a few things, new things this month in the works. Jack Brainerd and I are doing a 4-day clinic June 20th, 21st, 22nd, and 23rd in Gainesville. And I'll probably be going to Louisiana for another clinic with Jack in July.
And we never even got to talk about Jack.
I know. And, you know, that's a shame. We'll have to have you back on because, you know, I've ridden with Jack a few times, and it is definitely worth it to go out there. So if any of you guys are thinking about doing that clinic, you know, I have full-hearted recommendation. Hop on board. It's a great clinic. One of the things Jack is known for is he is the master of lead changes. So for those of you who are wanting to learn a really deceptively simple way to teach lead changes, definitely sign up for one of those clinics.
Yes.
Very good. It's
yes,
Donna.
Yes. And I'm big presence on Facebook. Sorry.
Okay. DonnaDuval.com is where you can find all the information. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we hope you dry out sometime soon.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. Take care.
Great. Thanks for stopping by.
You too.
Well, let's do this. And by the way, I hear that Jack Brainerd is a little bit nicer in his clinics than George Morris. So there's that.
Very nice. Yeah. I don't think I would survive a George Morris clinic.
No, I mean, he probably isn't telling girls they're fat and they need to lose weight. And
I would be the one. He'd say, put down the fork.
Well, let's do this. Speaking of pleasant, lovely people, I had the opportunity last week to do a special episode of Stable Scoop with a lovely girl by the name of Fleur Magali, and she is from Switzerland. And I just saw her posting. It's so funny. I'm going to play one of her songs today because she just posted. She's doing a new music video, and she lives in the Swiss Alps. And one of the things in the new music video is going to be her hang gliding through the Swiss Alps, and she just posted pictures of her doing that.
Oh, no big deal.
Yeah. So, and the scenery is just incredible. Her videos are so cool. But she did a cover, and everybody in the world has heard Pharrell's song Happy. Well, she did her own version of it, and I really, really liked it. It's different than his, and it was just a lot of fun. So let me play that for you. We're coming back with John St. Ryan. We're going to talk about training, and we're going to talk about equitation, and we're also going to talk about the fact that he's an actor and what that's like. So we got all of that coming up on today's show yet. But first, our new friend from Switzerland.
Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you. Clap along if you feel like that's what you wanna do. It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here, you can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air like I don't care, baby, by the way. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like that's what you wanna do. Bring me down, can nothing bring me down? Your love is too high. Happy, bring happy, me down, happy, can nothing happy, bring me down? I said, bring me down, can nothing bring me down? Your love is too high. Happy, bring happy, me down, happy, can nothing happy, bring me down? I said, clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Cause I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. Cause I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you. Cause I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like that's what you wanna do.
I was Happy by Flor Magaly, of course, a cover of Pharrell's song, but a much different cover, and I really, really did like it. It was really cool. If you want to see more of her music, just go to YouTube, and you spell her first name F-L-U-E-R, which, by the way, means flower in French. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek here with Mary Kitzmiller today in an unusual Friday appearance for Mary, and we are here with Coach Jen is in the producer chair. There will be no really bad ads today. I know. I'm sorry, everybody, but we'll be back next week with really bad ads. Jamie's out. She's she's right above us in Georgia for the weekend and celebrating some birthdays and some anniversaries and stuff. So she'll be back for next Friday. Get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We will carry anything you sent in this week over. Well, Mary, so what do you have coming up here soon as far as your schedule's concerned?
Let me pull it up.
Mary, you need to unplug your mic and plug it back in again. We have that problem where you fuzz out on us with a Mac.
How does that sound?
That's better. There we go.
Woohoo!
Okay. About every hour on a Mac, you got to do that. So go ahead.
You got to love Macs, let me tell you. speaking of which, I'm pulling up my schedule and it's lagging, but I will be in Ohio next weekend. I believe it's June 6th and 7th for a horsemanship clinic, and actually we'll be doing horsemanship over obstacles. So that's kind of timely. We had Donna on today, and that's in Midland, Ohio. That's up on my website. I've got clinic in June. June 20th through the 21st in Hobart, Oklahoma. That'll be horsemanship and rider confidence, and also on the website. Then I've got the 27th and 28th of June. I'll be doing a Texas clinic in Cedar Hill. That's going to be also obstacles, lots of obstacle clinics. So those will be a lot of fun. That's actually put on by the South Central Frisian Horse Association, but it's open to all breeds. September, I will be in Oregon. I'm in the works of going international once again in August. We'll be announcing that very soon. And then we just opened up entries for the October Triple Threat Clinic. Now, this is the second year that we've done this. It is just a mess of fun. It's the best clinic I've ever done, hands down, because we have me, Wylene Wilson, who's been on the show before, and Miranda Lyon. We'll have to get her on the show. And so we're covering three different topics. We're going to have a lot of training demos, and it's also in conjunction with they have a ranch rodeo that weekend. So lots of things to do in the evening. We do karaoke. We have dinner with the clinicians. So that is a lot of fun. So the information on that is on the website as well.
Very good. And that's, of course, MaryKitzMiller.com is the website name, MaryKitzMiller.com. So do you... When you get done with a big event like Road to the Horse, do you have people, do you see your fan base increasing, and do you have people contacting you after for things? Do those types of events really help you as a business?
They really do. And, you know, when I first started kind of putting myself out there and doing events like these, a lot of times, right away, I wouldn't really notice a blip in anything. And I would kind of think, oh, you know, and this is when I was doing smaller events and expos and things like that. I was like, well, I didn't really do anything. I guess chalk it up to experience. But then like 3 years later, someone would contact me and say, oh, I saw you at this, and would you come do this? Or we should get together and try this. And so it reverberates. It really goes a long way. And so, of course, the bigger events that I got involved with, you know, the more that happened. And, you know, one thing led to another with everything I've done. You know, I started doing the Mustang makeovers, and doing well in those really helped me present a good, you know, a good resume to Road to the Horse, and that really helped me to get on with them. And then in turn, Road to the Horse is opening up a lot of avenues for me. And, you know, even things that I just did for fun and I didn't think that it would do anything. I went to ride with Chris Cox last year, or maybe 2 years ago, and I was just going to ride. But he said, you mind if we film it? And I was like, sure. Luckily I had some starched shirts and cowboy hats. And I just thought, you know, wow, what a cool thing to do. But I have a lot of people that have seen that show and, you know, think it's great and want to try to get in one of my clinics because of that. So, you know, if anyone's starting out, you know, that's a great way to get your foot in the door, is just do everything you can, try to be everywhere you can. And, you know, you won't realize what it does for you oftentimes until a little later on, but it really does a lot.
And there's a perfect transition, because there's nobody that's probably lived in that particular role more than our next guest. And he is ready for you.
Right. Well, we've got a man of many hats. We've got John St. Ryan with us today. And he's a gentleman I went and rode with a few years ago when I wanted to learn more about Doma Vaquera and working with a Garrocha. How are you, John?
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you. You sound in sparky yourself there.
Yeah. Well, it's a
early
little later.
For John. Yeah.
Yeah, 9 o'clock for me. So I'm good. I'm awake now.
You're doing grand.
Yeah. So I wanted to have you on today to talk, well, about many things. There's a lot we could talk with you about, about working with the Garrocho or the Spanish Pole. That was something, you know, I really wanted to learn more about, and I went out to your ranch and had a great time. So for those who don't know, tell us a little bit about the Garrocho, working with that.
Well, I got my interest many years ago when I went to Spain, and it was just mainly the art of it. You know, I saw it in performance art rather than in practical use. And it just looked like, well, this has got to be something extra special. If you can work like this with a horse and one-handed, single-handed, then, now bearing in mind also at this point, Mary, I'd never seen, this many years ago, I'd never seen the Western riders roping and such like. So coming from England, Ireland, you know, we have two hands on the reins and just get over the fence and down under the ditch and around anything that you can get around. So it didn't really make much difference that you had two hands. Whereas this was so special, it really opened your eyes that you could actually operate a horse like that. You know, over here in the United States, you'd probably just take it for granted that you can operate a horse with one hand. But it is quite unique. And it's born out of that practicality of, you know, the horse had a job to do, a real job, which takes us further and further back in time, you know, to when we had horses in the military. And, you know, sadly, when those horses weren't needed anymore, well, I'm saying sadly, some of the art and the work deteriorated because it just became more recreational. And I think that's where we start to lose qualities. So it's not saying that people riding recreational aren't good riders. It's just that it doesn't dispose yourself to making a better horse. You know, you're just happy to, a lot of people are just happy to ride, go somewhere, be safe. And, you know, it's a different experience. But it's like everything in life. Not everybody wants to perfect this art. So the perfection of the art is, the Garrocho is really born out of that desire to perfect your art as a horseman or a horsewoman and ride in a better way. How's that for the first preamble?
That's pretty good. Pretty good.
And that wasn't scripted. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, and that goes exactly hand in hand with what I was talking about earlier about rising to the level of the horse, because oftentimes most of us aren't going to need our horse to go brand cattle or take us to town or, you know, or anything like that. We don't depend on our horse. So it's kind of easy to fall into just sort of being a passenger on your horse and riding around. And
And
that's what I love about the Garrocho, you know, and for those who don't know, like a 10 to 14 foot long pole. And, you know, oftentimes it's made of wood. Although I've been known to use a paint roller handle, very classy.
It's cheap and it works.
I'm trying not to cuss online, dear me.
Yeah. And if I drop it on my horse's head, he's more forgiving than wood. but so the idea is when you watch this, you're working, you have to work it with one hand. And when you see it, done by people who've mastered the art, it's breathtaking. It'll give you goosebumps. The horses are spinning under the pole and they're changing leads every stride. And, you know, they're going from very slow and controlled maneuvers to all of a sudden they'll pick up and gallop across the arena. So when I first saw it, I thought, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And I use it now as kind of, I call it my replacement for cattle work, because I don't have cattle or the facilities to house cattle to work. So it gives my horse a wonderful job. And, you know, you were talking about, you know, from England, you're not as used to seeing people ride with one hand and how amazing that is. And you would be surprised. In the Western world, I get a lot of people, you know, when they want to learn Garrocho or anything, one of the biggest requests that they have, they want to learn to ride one-handed. So even in the Western world, you get a lot of people who they're like, well, my horse doesn't neck rein. And so I tell them, you know, well, if you put a pole in one hand, they're going to learn to neck rein.
Yeah. But everything you were saying there about that, Mary, is very true. And the thing with the garrocha is, if people haven't seen it before, as you described it, it's meant to be traditionally 4 meters long, that's 13 feet, 1 inch. And from that, you have your regular garrocha length. Now, it's a little bit like I'm in Las Folks. You know, some guys will have a short 30 foot, some guys have a 60 foot, some guys even have a 70, 80 foot. Depends what they're doing. Well, it's the same with the garrocha. You might be riding a very, very tall horse. You don't really need a very short garrocha. But you might be riding a small horse, and you don't need a very long garrocha. So it all works out. And certain jobs are more desirable to have a shorter or longer garrocha. So it's, again, it's a personal preference. For people who want to try it, it is good fun, but it's also educational for you and your horse. And I always like to tell people this because they get buzz about, I'll go and buy one. Well, you can't buy them here. We'll get that sorted out straight away. Nobody's producing them and making them in the U.S. yet. You can get them from Spain, but the import duty is ridiculous. And, you know, unless you're crazy like me, don't do it. If you want the easy way, go to your lumber store, your lumber yard, or one of these places, and you get an 1 3/8 curtain rod, dowel, or whatever you call it, curtain pole, and just get a length cut, 13 feet or whatever. And if you've got a small horse, you get a 15-hand horse, you can go down to 12 feet. It's no big deal. And then just get your farrier to maybe shape off a little bit of an end, a point to it. Not sharp, just a nice blunt point, so you know which is which. Because that's important in the art, to know which is the base of the garrocha and which is the tip. And then off you go. Now, when I say off you go, give your horse a chance to know what this thing is. So be on the ground and just carry it, drag it, rub your horse with it until the horse becomes habituated to it. Because you don't want to be frightened of the pole. You know, it just needs to be something that's part of the scenario now. So just like anything that you want your horse to get used to, whether it's a slicker or whatever, you know, just take your time. Don't rush it, and the horse will find it. Now, once you've got that, you need to obviously, you know, ride with it. And that's a little bit different. So I'll try and give you a start scenario how to do this. You've done the little bit of work on the ground. You've dragged it. You've walked with the horse and the pole, and you've got them accustomed to it, and they're not worried about it. So then you get on the horse, have somebody hold the garrocha, and then ride the horse again in a circle one way and the other way, and have the person hold the garrocha and drag it, and you hold it and reach for it at the same time. But if the horse really was nervous, then just back off a little bit, give it time to get accustomed to it. But you'll be able to tell, and they do get used to it pretty quick. And the other thing is, just as a little safety thing, just occasionally, as you're walking in the circle, very lightly with whoever's handling the garrocha, just tap or touch the horse's leg, because that can really upset them. Now, that takes me to the other thing that's important when you're doing this. Another aspect of learning to use the garrocha is, again, as you said, Mary, it really is valuable for you and the horse. And I'll add on to that, it's very valuable, like as much as using a lasso rope, a lariat is. That really helps gentle your horse. Because if that thing's spinning around and just whipping and touching their legs or their body lightly or whatever, and then the noise from one side to the other side, and then the actual throwing action, if the horse can tolerate that, it's a much more gentle horse. So if you can drag a garrocha pole around with you and work around it and go underneath it and change sides with it without the horse being bothered, again, you get a more broke, gentle horse. That's another hamburger.
Yeah, it's such a great way to get your horse started on obstacles, because I have yet to have a horse really react poorly to the Grocha. For some reason, it does not seem as intimidating to them as, say, trying to rope something and drag it along. And in fact, I use it as a precursor on a horse. I want to drag something with a lariat. It's a great precursor to that. Because, of course, you know, if something goes wrong, it's very easy to drop. You're not going to get hung up in it, you know, unless you really try. And I cannot stress how important it is, even if you just really trust your horse, to check them out on the ground first. You know, a lot of times when I'm ready, I'll just ride by and grab it. But I've done a lot with that horse on the ground. I know they're used to things touching them on their legs. But, you know, I was teaching
That's fine there, It's just that you don't want to betray the horse. You know, it's like the horse is trusting us and saying, okay, what else you want to show me, what else? And if you think, oh, I just want you to know that this isn't going to hurt you. That's okay. They'll appreciate it. But some people, they get a little bit cavalier, and, you know, it's like one guy I know decided he wanted to learn mounted shooting. So what did he do? He got in his horse, mounted, and shot. That was the last time he did it. He got bucked off, and now the horse, anytime it hears a loud shot or a bang or crack or anything, it sets off bucking.
All right, he deserved that.
You can shoot off of any horse. Yeah. You can shoot off of any horse once.
Yeah, exactly.
is the saying. And you know, I was teaching a group of people. We were working with the Grocha, and the horses, you know, I showed them on the ground without the horses. And, you know, I wanted to kind of get things going. And I almost said, oh, hop on your horses and I'll hand you a pole. And I said, no. Let's check them out on the ground first. And this one horse, because the horses, you know, just eyeballing them, they looked really calm and relaxed. And this one horse was half asleep, and the gentleman was working with him, and he touched him on his rump, and he wasn't paying attention, didn't have a good handle on the reins. And that horse, you know, the horse had a lot of underlying issues, as it turned out. He took off down the road bucking. And that in and of itself was a bad experience for the horse. But think of how much worse it could have been had he just tried that from the saddle. The horse had a lot of underlying serious issues, as it came to be known. But
they get like that, they remember those one little thing that sets it off, and it might not be something that you think, well, why is that? It's not even relative, you know. I mean, I've touched this horse with this, I've done it with that. What the heck? But it's the horse is remembering that one specific context that where it got afraid. And that was it, unfortunately. We did this, when I made the video, the Art of the Grocha, and we put the thing together, I wanted to show step by step how to operate and how to be safe. But we also had a horse in training at the time, and very, very reactive, overreactive, should I say, Arab gelding. And I thought, well, this is a good opportunity to show how to present the Grocha to a horse that is so reactive, and you've got to be careful, and it might not work out great, and it's going to take a lot longer. But I needed to put that in because so many times you see these, you know, how-to DVD videos or whatever, and it all looks nice and smooth, but you don't get there, well, what happens if this happens? So we put this in. It just happened one time when we were shooting it, and the wife was on the camera, and the assistant was on the horse, and I'm just doing the ground, holding the pole, he's walking around, and he was taking it a little bit, and it just happened when he took it, and the same thing, the back of the pole just touched the horse's leg. Well, it blew sideways. You know how, you know, the race is nanoseconds. Almost wiped out the camera person. That was a good thing. But we got it all on video. She was very, very astute and just hopped to the side while videoing it. So we put it in the video, and it's amazing. You know, people have said, we're so glad you put that in, because up to then we were thinking, well, this is all right. There's nothing to worry about. But then he puts that little be careful marker on. And that's in a way worth a lot to people, because I just want people to be safe, and I want the horses to be safe. And anytime you introduce something new, it needs some habituation before the horse can fully tolerate it.
And that DVD, Yeah, that DVD, The Art of the Garrocha, is a wonderful DVD. You know, I get questions all the time. How do I get started? What's the first thing I do? I recommend that DVD often. It's a really great way to get started, and it just breaks it down step by step. Because it seems pretty easy. You know, when I first looked at it, I thought, you know, when I first saw someone doing it, I thought, oh yeah, just grab a pole and ride around. And once you get it in your hands, and yeah, you're trying to maneuver your horse, and you realize, oh, okay, I don't know what I'm doing. So that's a wonderful DVD.
See, now I wouldn't think that.
Well,
right?
Very fortunate.
It doesn't even look easy just standing on the ground and doing it.
I think it's like anything, you know, you just, once you start, you break it down to the simple things. Like you say, you just, well, start on the ground at least. You don't even have to start with a, you know, 13-foot pole. You can start with a, you know, a broom handle. Just get the idea first, and then, you know, you break it down to whatever you feel necessary to break it down to, but at the very simplest, at least do it on the ground first, because you'll save yourself some grief. You know, as Mary pointed out, it's so easy just to whack the horse on the head or drop it or catch it on your feet or your stirrup, and the worst thing in the world is, especially for, you know, because a lot of people are riding within an arena, they're not out in the camp or in the countryside. And you've got walls and you've got fences. And if you're doing a left circle and you're right-handed and that 13-foot pole is sticking out, you better be careful that you don't catch the tip on a fence post, on a lamp post, or on a piece of fence, you know, as you're going around. That will unseat you pretty quickly.
and don't pole vault yourself out of the saddle.
Yeah. Yeah, we could put all the bloopers on.
Yeah, that's always good fun. And unfortunately, don't learn it the way that I did and have those things happen to you and then try not to do it the next time. So definitely check out the DVD. It's very good.
Is the DVD right on your website? Is it John Saint, johnstryan.com?
That's it. Yeah.
Okay. And it's right there on the website. We'll post a link to it also on our Facebook page and in the show notes for today's show. We only have a couple minutes
the thing
left.
With that was go ahead. Yeah. I was going to say that the thing about that was that when I learned it, I had nothing to refer to. So I was picking it up off video. I was going this way and that way and trying to find whatever I could. And then I had the good fortune to get with this particular Spanish trainer, Jose Manuel. And he was excellent and so helpful and so generous in his time. And what made it was getting the subtleties. You know, I could pick up quite a lot, and I went to a couple of clinics and stuff like that with it. And, you pick up a lot. But he, you know, one-to-one, you get those subtleties. And that's what I tried to pass on in the DVD, because otherwise you don't get the flow. And I think when we worked together, Mary, that was the thing I was trying to express to you, and I think you understood pretty well that it's, anybody can handle it, but if it's not got some art and some flow with it, it doesn't have the beauty. And I guess that's like anything. You could say that, like even with roping and such, like, you know, I can catch, but it might not look as artistic as some of the other guys out there. Well, that's a guarantee, I'll tell you that much. The nearest I ever got to a cow when I was growing up was a milk carton. Anyway, no.
I got to ask you, before we let you go, johnstryan.com is the website again. You came over here, I guess the initial thought was to become an actor. So is it easier dealing with the horses or with producers?
Oh, it's much easier dealing with horses.
I thought that'd be your answer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. much easier.
And you're the first guest we've ever had on that has played a cyborg. So so there's that.
I'll tell you, a quick story about that. They called me up. I was I'd worked for this company before. It was a US company called Canon Films, and they called me, and I was living in England at the time. And this producer says, John, you know, and he has an accent. He was Israeli. He says, I want you to be in the next movie, and you will play a cyborg. I said, what? Cyborg? I play in a sideboard? What the hell? What am I, you know, what is this? Because a sideboard in England is a cabinet, you know, wardrobe.
Oh, that's right. in the dining room.
Yeah, no, you know, right. No. And then he tells me it's American sideboard. I don't care what kind of sideboard it is. what is it? Okay, sideboard. I got you.
So you were an American cyborg, which Steel Warrior, which I think was back in the 90s, wasn't it? Wasn't that a...
Yes, it did.
And now, was that just hours and makeup every day?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a tough one. Because, you know, as the cyborg deteriorated, you know, first of all, he lost a piece of this, and then he lost a... And, of course, then when he finally lost his eye, that was a huge job. And it was about 2 hours... I mean, it's not too bad, I suppose. These days, there's so much done with prosthetics. I know some actors who are sitting in a chair for 6 hours, and then they just do a quick shoot. 5 minutes, that's it. That's them done.
Well, yeah, you've done a lot of film, TV and film. You know, what was your favorite part of doing TV and film, and what was the part that you went, oh, I hope I never have to do that again?
Okay.
And well, that's the parts you can say on the air, by the way. Just saying.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, the part I hope I never have to do again is when I was jumping 300 feet off a cliff, supposedly having been on a carabiner, or, you know, like a rappelling line. And I'd already done this gag, we call it a gag, it's a stunt. It was back in the day I was doubling for Sean Connery. Uh-huh. And the gag was for me, the movie was called The Medicine Man, and we were in the jungle down in South America, and I had to rappel down to rescue this girl who got fallen off this limb. Well, Sean had to rappel down, his character. So anyway, they said, you know, I want you to do this, and every time you do it, you get $500, because you get paid by the gag, by the time, every time you do it. So I thought, this is great. I mean, we're talking back in the 90s again for that kind of money. So, I'll swing out and drop down and did it. And fine, 300 foot. And then we had to cut the rope and fall into this big lake. Well, it worked two times, three times. And I'm laughing. You know, I've already made $1,500 in a short space of time. And you know, so I'm... very monetary conscious like that. He says, all right, would you mind doing it again? I said, hell no, we can do this all day. You know, I'm just tagging it. You know, so he's laughing. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm getting a bit blasé about the whole thing. And the stunt guy coordinator comes over and says, you check your line, John? I says, yeah, fine. I've just been doing it. I've done it three times. He said, did you check your line? I said, yeah. No, I hadn't. And the guy, the special effects guy who was next to me, said, no, you didn't check it. And I said, you jerk, what are you telling that for? You know. And he came over and he held it. And he says, well, it's a good job we're checking it now, isn't it? Because it's slipped, it's upside down. Well, my heart sank, you know, because to throw yourself off and it's 300 foot down and you don't have a brake. Because that's basically what had happened. I'd turn the thing upside down, the brake, whatever. Can't even what you call it now. So that shortly after that, it was a very humbling experience to not be so damn cocky about what you're doing in life. Yeah. And I think the best one, the most enjoyable experience I had back in 97, I think it was, we shot a TV series for Fox called Roar. And we shot this thing. It was meant to be in 5th century Ireland, and it was a bit like, if you remember the movie Braveheart with Mel Gibson,
yeah,
it was like a TV version of
that about 100 times,
with the Irish taking the part.
Okay.
And the character I played was the warrior character, who was the best friend to the lead, and the lead was played by Heath Ledger. And Heath and I worked together for a year on this project, and it was absolutely brilliant.
Nice. Brilliant.
Really enjoyed it. And we got to ride horses. And it was just a great, great time. But unfortunately, he didn't make it, most people know.
Right.
He did so well with his career, but that was a terrible accident.
But anyway. I have to ask you this because Jennifer will not forgive me. The producer is also my wife, is a huge fan. She has his picture above her desk in there in the studio of Sean Connery. So did you meet Sean Connery and was he nice? I have to ask.
Yes, of course. I spoke with Sean at great length, and we've been very good friends ever since. We call each other every morning, and he tells me, stop calling me, John. Bugger up. That's it. he's a great guy.
I had to ask. We don't always get that answer. We have asked that about some very famous people and gotten the, you don't want to know. So we've gotten that answer before too, John. So I wasn't sure what was coming.
Yeah.
But I guess if you ever want to help Sean out in a movie again, that was a good answer. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, and he's not. His last film role was League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He's not done anything lately. We need to get him back.
Oh no, he's done a couple since then, but he's very low key, and I think he's done with it. You know, he doesn't need to be out there.
No,
there comes a time. I think there's only Michael Caine who can't quit.
John, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a pleasure. JohnSt.Ryan.com is where you'll find him, and you're in California. What part, right?
Yeah, Southern California.
Southern California.
Flowers north of Los Angeles, yeah.
All right, very good. Thank you, John. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Enjoyed it. All good talking
thank
to you again,
so
Mary.
Much.
Take care. We'll have you back.
Too.
Take care. Love. Bye now.
What a trip.
Right?
He was something else. Boy, he had his Sean Connery accent down perfect.
I know. It must have taken him years. No. But if you're in that area, Inyokern, I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, he is definitely worth riding with. You know, we only just barely scratched the surface of what
too.
That gentleman knows. I know, yeah, very humble. Really cool history with horses. Obviously he knows a lot about how to work with the Garrocha and Doma Vaquera and has been to Spain, but also rode quite extensively with Tom Dorrance. And we didn't even get to the topic of equitation sciences. So definitely going to have him back on and kind of delve further into that. Or we could talk more about Sean Connery.
Yeah, well,
either way,
well,
I am
Jennifer,
totally
did I
happy.
Do okay? I asked the question. I got it in there. So
thank you.
Yeah.
Good job.
I knew you were
waiting.
I have
sweaty palms. My heart is all a flutter.
Yes, he doubled for Sean Connery. That's interesting. I always wondered about the stunt guys. We love having stunt guys on because they always have stories to tell. They're the ones with the stories.
One of my very good friends, and we may have to get her on actually, was a stunt woman for many years out in California. Yes, and they do have very cool stories about Hollywood.
Yes, they do because they see it from a whole different side. So they see it from a whole different angle. Well, that's it for today. We've plain run out of time. Mary, tell everybody where they can find you.
You can find me when I'm not underwater in Texas on my website, marykitzmiller.com. And you can follow me on Facebook at Mary Kitzmiller Horsemanship.
Very good. And of course, you can see all of the past listen to all the past episodes of Horses in the Morning at horsesinthemorning.com. Best way to listen to the recorded version of our show is on the Horse Radio Network app. Just go to the App Store and search for Horse Radio Network. It's free. It's easy. It's simple to download the shows and listen right on your phone while you're doing other things. That's how most people listen. You can also find us on iTunes and all the other podcast players that are out there. We want you to have an absolutely terrific weekend. We'll be back here at 9 a.m. again on Monday morning. And, of course, we're going to be talking a little horse racing next week on and off because it is Triple Crown time, and we have a chance for that. So that is coming up next weekend. We'll be talking a little bit about that next week as well. Mary, it's been a pleasure as always. Take care.
Absolutely. You too.
All right. You be safe down there.